Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum,
Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. Hey, as Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody. Happy New Year, Matt. Happy New Year, everybody listening.
Indeed. Happy 2023. I have high hopes for this year. Good to be back talking about monster movies. Watched a couple good monster movies and horror movies over the break, which maybe will come up in conversation either tonight or later on, but yeah, happy to be back.
My obsession right now, so my aunt, this is a movie I did watch over the break, a trilogy of movies. My aunt gifted me the DVD collection of the Creature from the Black Lagoon series, and I've grown up on the first one, loved the first one, seen it a million times, but I'd never seen the sequels, which is Revenge of the Creature and The Creature Walks Among Us. I always thought they were like, you know, pretty low grade, just, you know, cash grabs. They may be. However, there is an unexpected level of artistry to them. And there's a character arc with the creature over all three films. Like, they connect to each other in a way that really blew my mind. So I'm just really obsessed with the whole Creature from the Black Lagoon series.
Awesome. I love the first one. I have not seen any of the sequels. And, you know, like you said, kind of didn't have very high expectations for them, or kind of thought maybe they were, you know, like just B-grade schlock movies or whatever. But that's good to hear. And, like the first one, I think, is surprisingly kind of beautiful as well. I love like the underwater cinematography, and it's very eerie and shadowy. So, yeah, I'll have to watch the sequels, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you obsessed with anything right now?
I was thinking, I did see a movie in theaters a couple days ago, which is, I guess, in a way, a strange beast movie. It's called EO. It's a Polish movie. It's about a donkey. It's kind of just, it follows this donkey as it like wanders around Europe from like one community to the next, basically. It's about the human characters that he interacts with, as well as the donkey himself. So it's not a horror movie. There's nothing supernatural or fantastic about it, but he is a strange beast, and it's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, EO. Okay, it's a drama road movie. That's how Google describes it.
It's kind of unclassifiable, though. Like, it's a road movie where, like, the only traveler is the donkey, basically. Hard to describe, but very, very good.
That's amazing. Okay, I'm gonna keep it in mind.
Yeah, check it out.
So, everybody, again, thanks for hanging out. Please, just before we, you know, get into everything, I just want to say your ratings and your reviews mean a lot to us. We really ended season two strong on a real high note. So we're excited. This is season three, officially third season. So we're going to take some risks, maybe a little bit with some of our movie choices. But again, we appreciate your support and sticking with us.
Indeed. And make sure you check out our website and Patreon as well. Website, CampKaijuMovieReviews.com. We have additional reviews on there. We have, you know, links to all of our past episodes, fun lists and things like that. So make sure to check that out. And thank you to our patrons as well. When you become a patron of Camp Kaiju.
That reminds me, Matt, we don't have a guest host tonight. So who will swing and hit the Gamera gong?
Ooh. I don't think you've done it yet, and it seems like you always are very excited about it. So you can take the honor if you want.
Okay, so this is your pick, so I'll hit the gong. On my pick, you can hit the gong if we don't have any guest hosts.
That seems fair, yeah.
Okay, so here I go. I'm going to hit the old Gamera gong. This is for Kelly. This is for Frank. And this is for Chris. Thank you so much. Please tell a friend and get him on here for this gong show. So one, two, three, ha!
even more amazing than I thought it would be. Truly exciting. And whenever we get new patrons, it honestly is very exciting. So it's appropriate.
Yeah, I was shoveling a lot of snow today. So swinging a giant mallet was one thing my body didn't want to do. But I did it for our supporters.
Much appreciated. It's heavy, even if it's an imaginary mallet. So, you know.
I don't know that.
Right. Sorry.
No, it's okay. We just want to plug season 3 a little bit more. Coming up next is the Toho 1965 film Frankenstein Conquers the World. This will be with a special guest. So actually, Matt, you're saved from hitting the gong next week. This time, I know, hold on, you'll get there. We are teaming up with the Twin Cities podcast Frankenstein Minute. Now, they do the classic Universal Frankenstein films. So we were like, help us break down the Japanese take on Mary Shelley's monster. This is another movie I watched over the break. Absolutely worth your time. Everyone go check it out in anticipation for our episode.
All right. So yeah, The Untamed. I first saw this pretty much about when it came out in late 2017. Pretty much all I knew to start off with was that it was about a tentacled sex monster. And, you know, like, just assumed that it was like shock value and very empty and juvenile and offensive and all that. And then read some really positive reviews of it. And, you know, the director, Amat Escalante, won Best Director at the Venice Film Festival for this movie. So, yeah, I was really surprised. I was like, how is a movie about a tentacled sex monster actually a good movie? I think it is. I think it definitely has some flaws, but it's way more than just like a schlocky sort of like, you know, like offensive movie like I was talking about. So that's my history with the movie. But I feel kind of bad like making you watch this for our first film of 2023, Vincent.
What? No, don't make me feel bad. I have to watch something to balance out all the rubber suit monster movies that I watch.
Which are also great. I mean, you know, as we said in the intro, all strange beasts welcome here. So
absolutely. And this is a strange beast. It is an extraterrestrial. It has come to Earth to F things up, literally and metaphorically. I first heard about this movie probably a year ago around this time when we were planning our Camp Kaiju partnership, and you were like, oh, how about this tentacled sex monster movie? And I was like, great. So we finally got around to it. I'm glad we did. It's not drastically different from the rest of the movies we've covered in terms of themes and maybe aesthetics, but it's very different in terms of it has like that art house flair to it, maybe. It's not the type of movie I am well versed in, so I'm interested tonight to hear you talk about it in terms of kind of especially the cinematography and the direction and why it's still a movie worth watching.
Yeah, totally. I think you describe it really well. I think, you know, I think it's different in like kind of the seriousness of its subject matter, I guess. Like we've talked about similar themes in like past episodes on Camp Kaiju before, but I think just like, you know, this movie, despite its kind of like outlandish concept, I do think it's trying to sort of talk of, like, it has kind of like a naturalistic gritty vibe at the same time that it's kind of over the top and like, you know, fantastic at times. So I think that's an interesting kind of contradiction. So one of many unique things about the movie.
Yeah. And just to get it, I mean, we're not like a quote unquote family friendly podcast. I know, you know, we talk like we are, and you know, I do like to keep things PG-13, if you will.
Yeah.
We don't drop a lot of F-bombs on this show or anything. In fact, we don't. We may have once. That was Gary. Blame Gary. But this movie, and you know, it does need to be mentioned that it is more adult in its presentation, in its filmmaking. A lot of nudity, a lot of violence,
mm-hmm.
physical violence, sexual violence. So just putting a little disclaimer out there, if you do happen to be a teenager listening to this movie, which I know we do have a few. Just fair warning, you know, so it's nothing you can't handle, but just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, and I think it's an adult movie, certainly in terms of its, like, what it depicts, like you said, but also just in terms of, like, you know, it's talking about really serious issues that I think the majority of adults deal with, like sexual repression, kind of like destructive lust and things like that. I mean, like, not, you know, certainly most adults don't deal with it in the same way this movie does, but, like, they're adult depictions and adult concepts, I guess I'll just put it that way.
100%. I think we're on the same page of taking this movie seriously, despite the rather absurd descriptor of a tentacled sex monster. It is a movie you need to take seriously. So,
yeah, totally. Yeah. I do think it's kind of funny that our last episode was about Luca, the Pixar movie, and, you know, The Untamed is about as far as possible from that as you can get. But that's great. I love it.
Yeah, seriously. I love it too.
It's not intentional, but I'm glad it worked out that way.
Yeah. That's what's fun about this show.
Exactly.
So do you want to just talk about the plot synopsis?
Yeah, let's dive into it. I'll begin if that's okay.
Yeah, certainly.
So the film opens with a mysterious shot of a projectile drifting through space, and then it switches between two parallel storylines. One of them follows Alejandra, a sexually frustrated mother of two, married to Angel, a closeted gay man having a secret affair with Alejandra's brother Fabian. Despite his homosexuality, Angel is very homophobic around other people and makes disparaging remarks about gay people.
The other storyline follows Veronica, a young woman who is sexually obsessed with a tentacled alien creature that originated from a crashed meteor. An elderly couple keeps the alien in their barn in the countryside and allows certain people to derive sexual pleasure from it. Veronica has been visiting the creature for years. It has never hurt her until suddenly bites her in the abdomen.
So Veronica is then treated by Fabian at the hospital and they become friends. She wants to keep visiting the alien, but the elderly couple forbids it since it has now injured her. Meanwhile, Angel confronts Fabian in the hospital parking lot and angrily asks him why Fabian hasn't been answering his texts. Fabian tells him the affair is over. Veronica encourages Fabian to visit the alien at the barn, which he does, but he is then found naked in a field, sexually assaulted, and beaten into a coma.
Alejandra looks through her brother's phone and finds out about his affair with her husband. She takes the evidence to the police, who arrest Angel. Alejandra and one of Angel's co-workers testify against him. Veronica then travels to the barn with Alejandra, where the elderly couple explain the monster. It's basic, pure, and in touch with its sexual needs, representing humanity's primitive side. The crater formed by the meteor's crash landing is shown, in which numerous animal species are copulating inside of it. Goats, snakes, tortoises, Gila monsters, whole bunch of, it's a menagerie in there.
Like one of the craziest images I've seen in recent movies, by the way, just like an insane moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So back to the storyline. Alejandra is drugged by the couple and is taken into the barn where the creature pleasures her. She becomes infatuated with it, returning often, even taking her kids with her so they can play outside. The couple becomes concerned by the creature's newfound capacity for violence. Meanwhile, Veronica has sex with a man, but finds that she can no longer be gratified by anything but the creature.
Angel's wealthy parents bail him out of prison, berating him for embarrassing them. He visits Alejandra, desperate to reunite with his family, but Alejandra refuses. He hits her and apparently is about to shoot her, but he accidentally shoots himself in the leg. I do want to say that there is a scene before this where Angel is at his parents' house, and they've told him he can't go home to his house, and he's in his old bedroom, presumably, and there's a bunch of guns and, like, taxidermied animals on the wall. So it clearly represents the environment Angel grew up in, and he takes that gun, the handgun, and does try to kill himself. He backs down from that, but then later he does use the gun to try to maybe shoot Alejandra. Alejandra takes his injured body, now he shot himself in the leg, body to the barn, where she discovers Veronica's corpse in the monster's lair. Alejandra drags Angel's body into the barn, where the creature kills him. Alejandra and the man who owns the barn throw the corpses of Angel and Veronica into a pit where the monster's other victims, which are rapidly increasing, are also hidden.
And that's the end. That's almost the end. There's one more brief moment after that, but a very, very abrupt and ambiguous ending to this movie.
Yeah, very abrupt. As if, to me, it was like, as if we were just like, we had the camera on a person's life, and then someone just shut the camera off. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's over. That little voyeuristic experience I had is now over.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're totally right. And that's kind of something that this director does a lot. Kind of, you know, a narrative that kind of leaves out a bunch of stuff and leaves a lot of things unexplained and seems like it's kind of just like jumping into the story all of a sudden and then has an abrupt ending like that. It's something that he's done before. And I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. Kind of crazy, absurd plot with like a very gritty, like real life feel, which is kind of a disturbing combination in this case.
Yeah. The film was directed by Amat Escalante. He won the Silver Lion for Best Director at the 2016 Venice Film Festival for The Untamed. Were you familiar with his other work?
Yeah, I've seen his movie Heli from 2013, which is even bleaker and more disturbing than this one. It doesn't really have a supernatural element. It's kind of just about like a drug robbery gone wrong and some ordinary people that are like really mixed up in that in like the worst possible way. It's the kind of movie with like, you know, like a scene of torture and like on-screen violence and like a 12-year-old gets pregnant, just like a very, very disturbing, bleak movie. But you know, since it's about like the drug trade in Mexico and like corrupt police and subjects like that, the bleakness is kind of warranted in that case, you know?
Wow.
But yeah, look, I think it's kind of interesting because directors like Amat Escalante, as well as some other Mexican directors like Carlos Regadas, Emiliano Rocha Minter is another one. There's what's called New Mexican Cinema, which has been kind of around since the early 90s. Some say the late 90s with Amores Perros, but you know, it's kind of like recent Mexican film, and there's this extreme brand of it. And when I say extreme, that's, you know, again, graphic sex and violence, bleak subject matter, things like that. So The Untamed is definitely kind of a part of that sort of strain of Mexican cinema, which can be hard to watch. And I don't think, you know, like some of the movies that I've seen that might be classified in that way are kind of empty shock value and maybe not as like, you know, deep as they think they are. But I mean, I admire them, and The Untamed especially, I think, is really trying to do something new in this kind of, you know, offshoot of this category of Mexican film.
Helping Amat Escalante is his cast. It's a four-person cast, largely four main actors. We have Alejandra. She's called Ale. She's played by Ruth Ramos. Simone Busillo as Veronica. Jesus Mesa as Angel. Eden Villavicencio as Fabian. Maybe for not being the most well-known actors, at least not in the United States. Yeah, I thought they killed it. The cinematography was by Manuel Alberto Claro. And this is someone, if you have things to talk about.
I just think it's interesting because he works with Lars von Trier a lot. He shot Melancholia, Nymphomaniac, and The House That Jack Built, which are the last three features that Lars von Trier directed. Maybe not the last three, but three recent ones anyway. And so, you know, Claro is no stranger to provocative, shocking subject matter. That's usually what von Trier does. But I feel like this cinematographer, you know, morbidly beautiful, like they're creepy and they're eerie and you know something bad is about to happen. But they really manipulate kind of, you know, nature and reality in very unexpected ways. And he's a really great cinematographer. And I think The Untamed is a very good example of how unsettling he can make seemingly mundane things seem to be.
Yeah, the zoom in shots, the extremely slow zoom in shots I've noticed in other, you know, films and TV shows. And it just, it gets me every time with that kind of unsettling feeling. It's really good and used to great effect in The Untamed on a lot of crotch shots, I would say.
No, there's one example of that in particular where Alejandra is just about to meet the tentacled sex monster. She has never met it before, and she's kind of lying on the grass in a field, and she's drinking some tea with some kind of drugs in it, And it starts as a wide shot, and it just keeps on zooming in and zooming in to her crotch. And like, she is wearing a dress, so it's not, she's not nude in this particular scene. But yeah, like, it's, you know, it's just a very weird shot, and it like suggests so much about what is going to happen in this film, or like what's going to happen in the next scene. And it, somehow it doesn't seem like sordid or shocking to me. Like, I feel like there's a very good reason for that kind of shot, you know?
Agreed. Right, right. That's a very good distinction. It didn't seem pervy to me. Like, it wasn't a perverted shot. Like, oh, the cameraman's just getting his rocks off. It was like, no, there's a reason for this. We've seen in the preceding half of the movie. And like you said, it directly leads into, it's foreshadowing in a way to what's about to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We'll probably get a little bit more into that in the form and aesthetic section, but yeah, lots of amazing shots in this movie.
Well, before we get into that, we got to tell you about BanditsEmporium.com, the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. Matt, we actually have a brand new shirt that's dropping probably by the next episode. It is a mech inspired design, a mecha robot giant kaiju in a cityscape. Stay tuned. Our in-house artist really did some great work with this one. So check out BanditsEmporium.com for that and some other monster inspired t-shirts. You can hit the link in our bio. Part of the proceeds go to supporting this very show. BanditsEmporium.com. Whatever your style, they have you covered. As they say, we sell shirts. And as Camp Kaiju says, oh boy, here we go. Production, backstory, and release. Super interesting. So Escalante was inspired in part by an actual there was a Mexican newspaper article at this time about a drowned man, which was loaded with homophobia. Like, it was a tabloid piece of, you know, sort of like a tabloid magazine, which is reflected in the film itself. And it's very homophobic and describes the man, a real life man, in very derogatory ways. And Escalante thought, you know, I live in Mexico. It is a predominantly Catholic nation, which comes with certain, that's the word I'm looking for, views towards homosexuality that may not be the most progressive. So he wanted to make a film about that. Escalante did sort of lose steam writing this particular story about the man who was murdered for being homosexual. And then he kind of changed the story and added the sort of the science fiction extraterrestrial bent, but it wasn't always supposed to be that. And I'm getting all this, of course, from other sources of mine. I was listening to the podcast Horror Queers from Bloody Disgustings Network, and they had a whole episode about The Untamed. So most of my information comes from there, and as well as Matt's, you've done some great research on this as well.
Yeah, no, thank you for adding that. That's an extremely important piece of subtext for sure. And you know, I guess just like to backtrack a moment, like I think when I first saw this, the thing that I was most impressed by was the social commentary in the film, because it very clearly denounces homophobia and misogyny in Mexican culture. And I wasn't really expecting that for a movie that I thought might be kind of misogynistic itself. Like, that is definitely not the case. And maybe there are a couple scenes which are a little questionable, but I think for the most part, he shows a lot of sensitivity, Escalante does, towards the women characters and the gay characters, even though they're often kind of like, particularly in the case of Angel, they're like, you know, unlikable, kind of morally repugnant characters in a lot of ways, and yet there's something that's very human and relatable about them. So I just admire that about the movie a lot.
For sure.
The film was also inspired by the movie Possession from 1981, directed by Andrei Zulofsky. Really great, very disturbing movie. Similar in some ways. That movie is kind of about the dissolution of a marriage, Sam Neill and Isabella Gianni. And it's really emotionally intense. And then you have kind of like a parallel storyline about this gross, kind of slimy, murderous monster that's like kept in like a dark room, basically. And in the movie Possession, that monster is sort of a metaphor for those two people's, you know, sexual jealousies and frustrations. So we see kind of a reflection of that in The Untamed, where this, you know, this the tentacled alien creature is a manifestation of these human characters kind of frustrated lusts and desires and whatnot. So definitely some very strong inspiration from the movie Possession, and the director Zulofsky is actually thanked in the credits of The Untamed. So it's a very intentional homage.
Right, right. Oh, the film is an international co-production funded by companies in Mexico, Denmark, France, Germany, Norway, and Switzerland. So an international film for sure, despite it's very, I mean, it is a Mexican film through and through. The original title of the film is called La Región Salvaje, The Savage Region. I personally prefer that title versus The Untamed. Does it mean the wilderness where the monster lives? Does it mean the monster itself? Does it mean the nether regions of the people involved? Like, the savage region could mean so many things. And it just, for me, paints an image of violence.
Yeah, no, I think I totally understand what you're saying, although I was actually just going to say this is one of the few cases where I think like the new English title is actually more accurate than the original one. So I guess we kind of differ on this a little bit. I just think that The Untamed so perfectly encapsulate the themes of the movie. And I guess maybe this is a good time to transition to our next section about the themes. Because, you know, if the monster is a metaphor for, you know, sexual repression, the, you know, kind of self-destructive lust that a lot of people feel, you know, being irresistibly attracted to what we know can hurt us. I think, like, throughout our adult lives, we're kind of tamed into, like, not giving into those temptations. We're kind of taught that sex is, like, a bad thing and we have to repress it or avoid it or ignore it or just, like, do it in sort of socially sanctioned ways. This movie is saying, like, untame yourself. And, like, the alien is obviously, like, the agent of chaos that can make that happen.
That's a great argument for The Untamed. Talk about sexual repression and the destructiveness of lust and just that the irresistible urge that people can become consumed with, because that's what we see. And this is just my take, you know, as I'm watching the movie, I'm not seeing a positive relationship with sex, with this monster. I'm seeing it more, you know, as a form of addiction and the extreme lengths that people go to get that pleasure, which this monster, like, its whole thing, Veronica says at one point, you know, it is only meant to provide pleasure. And yet she and Fabian are both seriously injured by this monster. Angel is killed at the end. So I'm just like, what does that say about our need for, or our, you know, our lustful urges, our addictive urges to whatever, you know, insert whatever substance or action there. So I think the adverse effects are as much a part of this experience as the pleasure factor.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think, like, it kind of boils down to, like, sexual repression will always end badly. And I feel like pretty much all the characters in this movie, maybe with the exception of Fabian, are repressed in some way. You know, like, Alejandra is certainly sexually frustrated. Like, her husband, Angel, is, you know, bisexual or gay. We don't really know exactly. But, like, she definitely gets very little love from him. Veronica, like you said, like, does not have a positive relationship with this creature. And then Angel, of course, you know, he's lying about who he is. He refuses to come out as gay. He, you know, masks his self-loathing, which is kind of instilled by his society, by being as outwardly homophobic as possible. So, you know, I think, like, to me, the movie is about, like, yeah, sex can be pleasurable, but if you repress it, if you kind of allow it to transform you, then it can be very destructive, it can be lethal, and it's not going to end well for anybody.
What Ale is doing by the end, she is going to this creature at the expense of her children, even. Like, she brings them along. Like, she's neglecting other things in her life because the pull of this pleasure is so strong.
Like, Ale is, like, you know, she's kind of putting her children at risk. She's, like, neglecting a lot of parts of her life, like you said. I think Veronica also, like, it's clear that she is being hurt by this creature, but she can't resist going back to it. And that ultimately dooms her.
Yeah, and she tries to not go back. That scene with the guy at the diner.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, don't leave me tonight because I'm afraid I'll go back. And I was like, whoa, man, she's trying.
Yeah, absolutely. But she's powerless to resist. And I think that's, you said it right. Addiction, sexual obsession, I think also. Like, it's a really powerful depiction of that, I think.
Yeah.
I think at the same time, you know, like, there's the scene of, like, all the animals having sex in the crater. And it is, you know, it's a very bizarre moment. But I think also that also ties to the theme of the movie a little bit because... You know, the elderly couple, they describe the alien as, they say that animals are attracted to it because the creature is more in touch with its immediate needs. So I think, like, there is that possibility of, like, a more animalistic nature that gives into its sex drives, its other drives and instincts, and doesn't have the sort of, like, civilizing or, like, societal aspects, which I think The Untamed is saying, like, that can be destructive. That's not necessarily a good thing. If, like, society is telling you that you have to act a certain way, then, you know, like, we see the horrible fallout in The Untamed, whereas, like, animals, they copulate. Like, that's what they do, and they can't feel good or bad about it. That's kind of just what they do. So I think that's an interesting contrast. And I think that goes back to The Untamed a little bit and kind of asks the question of, like, what separates humans from animals, if anything, if we have kind of the same drives and, you know, kind of biological needs that they do.
See, this is what we're talking about. The Untamed is so much deeper than a tentacled sex monster. real human instincts that we all deal with, and we try to navigate with the societal world we've built around ourselves for millennia.
Yeah.
It's not new. You know, as soon as people put on clothes for modesty, the horses were out of the barn there. So I think that leads right, unless there's more you want to talk about with the animal urges, but I think that relates, how that relates to Mexican culture. I mean, we could talk about broader, you know, human cultures, but the film is shot in Mexico. It is set in Mexico, like I said earlier. From what I know about Mexican culture, I'm not Mexican. I do not have friends who are Mexican, so I can only speak so much. But everything I have read and my impression is that Mexican culture is largely very conservative socially and morally. Again, most of the country is, you know, very religious. And I think that just influences the sort of the cultural repression of homosexuality. And we see that played out with Angel, especially Angel, and how he is so deeply closeted that he enjoys his relationship with Fabian, but man, when he changes masks and then he's the family man mode, he, like, outwardly insults gay people. He calls them all sorts of slurs, and it's just this machismo that is the toxic masculinity at play, and it's ultimately his downfall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a really good scene where we kind of understand some of that behavior when he's with his fellow construction workers. They're at a construction site, and we see two guys kind of just, like, play wrestling with each other. It's, like, very homoerotic. There's some dialogue that's like, let me see your little worm and stuff like that. You know, like, that's not, like, particular to Mexican culture. We see that, you know, like, men hanging out, just like, you know, drinking buddies, just like guys hanging out or whatever, kind of behaving that way. But, like, that masks, you know, I think that simultaneously masks, like, a sense of homophobia, but also homoeroticism. Like, you know, like, men love each other, men, but, like, don't want to, like, admit that. They don't want to, like, outwardly appear that way. They feel the social pressure to, like, prove that that's not who they are. So I think the scenes that we see of that in The Untamed, where Angel is kind of at the construction site and working with his colleagues, is pretty revealing in that way.
Yeah, and there's a quick moment when they are wrestling on the ground. I think it's Angel. He gets on top of his coworker and does some thrusting move.
Yep.
And it's just like that class. It's just the, you know, it's not gay. It's a dominance thing that is often used as an excuse for male-on-male, you know, sexual, forced sexual experiences.
Right, yeah. There's just so much, like, paranoia about, like, you know, like, wanting to seem like a man in this movie. And, you know, like, I think you, like, you also get that in the Hangover movies. So, like you said before, like, it's not particular to Mexico, and it's something that I think is very recognizable. But I think The Untamed, like, really kind of is really perceptive in kind of like the darkness behind that behavior, you know?
Yeah, and I think all that goes back to Angel's upbringing. I'm really, and I do appreciate Escalante's choice to include that scene with Angel in his, I'll say, his childhood bedroom with the guns and the taxidermied, you know, deer head on the wall. Because it gives real insight and, you know, pathos to what the trauma he has grown up with, you know, in a household where he couldn't be himself. He had, you know, his mom especially, she's like, you know, you never peed as a child and you should eat meat. And she's very overbearing and repressive. Mm-hmm. And in that scene when Angel's in his bedroom, considering suicide, you kind of see what he's been dealing with. So I appreciated that scene.
Yeah, for sure. There's the really devastating moment too, where Angel and his dad kind of have that confrontation where his dad hits him and then embraces him, and they're both crying, and not a lot is said in that scene. And in fact, the father doesn't really talk very much throughout the movie at all, but it's a really striking moment. Like, you get the sense that his dad is, you know, embarrassed by his son, like, doesn't really want him to be who he actually is, and yet at the same time they share this surprisingly tender moment. It's really effective, I think.
It shows how hard it is for men who carry themselves as, like, macho, you know, manly men, how hard it is for them, for those emotions to break through. Like, his father has these emotions of love and tenderness, and the only way he can express them is to slap his son across the face with physical violence. It's sort of like the outlet he needs to then show tender emotion towards his son. It's really complicated. These actions are relatable. They're universal. They are complex. They don't have easy answers, because it's like, well, why would you hit your son if you love them? Well, maybe you've lived in a household, in a country, in a world where it's the only way you can show your love.
Right.
But I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to mention Angel, you know, like, you might ask, why is this character so homophobic when he, in fact, is gay or bisexual? And, you know, that seems contradictory. There's not really an easy answer to that either. But, you know, we kind of see similar things playing out in reality all the time. So, you know, movies like The Untamed, I think they're not always the most fun watch, but they really do try to grapple with those difficult and uncomfortable questions, which I think, you know, need to be asked sometimes.
They need to exist so we can reflect not only on our own actions, but the actions of the society we live in. And if we don't like what we see, what can we do about it?
Exactly. Yeah, like, don't shack up with a tentacled sex monster. That's probably not the right thing to do. I feel like that's the implicit message of the movie. But, you know, like, grappling with your emotions and trying to come to grips with them probably is a more adult way to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, form and aesthetic.
You know, we talked about some of this a little bit already. I think the cinematography, again, like, a lot of it is kind of long, slow zooms or static shots. There's also a shot of just, like, a black opening at, like, the border of a forest, which is so... And also the music in this moment is really, really impactful. There's very creepy music throughout the whole film by Martin Escalante, who I believe is related to the director. I have to admit, I don't know exactly how. The other musicians are Lasse Marhaug and Guro Mo. The music is, like, very kind of like a lot of shrieking strings, like kind of like a low tone of dread throughout, a lot of stringed instruments. I think kind of like the classical music that's in The Shining, that I thought of that a lot while watching the film.
Yeah.
Which really accompanies these shots of nature very, very well, and kind of suggests, like, something unseen, just, like, outside of the frame, you know? The Untamed does that very well.
Yeah. Right from the opening shot is Veronica seemingly masturbating, the camera slowly pans down, and you see that she has been pleasuring herself with a tentacle of the monster. And then that's the only time you see the creature for, like, most of the rest of the movie. Then, like, the movie is more of a relationship drama than a monster movie. We do get a glimpse of the monster in the very first minute. It's very unsettling. There's a lot of nudity, like full frontal nudity. I, you know, as an American moviegoer, I do not see full frontal nudity on either gender in my mainstream movies.
Right.
This caught me off guard. I mean, it's artistic, right? It's done purposeful. It's not sleazy. It's life. It's, you know, we all take showers naked, and that's what we see Ale do in her, you know, in her morning routine. But it's just like, oh, okay, we're doing that. I didn't mind it. It's just, it's a choice. It's a strong choice.
For sure. You know, with the subject matter, which is all about sex and lust and desire and obsession, it makes sense. I mean, how, I don't think you can make a movie with that subject matter and not include nudity and sex and kind of like the sort of unpleasant aspects of, like, you know, having sex with somebody. Like, it all seems like it kind of needs to be shown here, you know?
Because what would it be otherwise? It would be tame. It would be a tamed movie. And Escalante was like, I can't, like, I got to show the savage region. I have to show it. And if we are talking about genitalia, he can't shy away from literally the title of the movie, what he's going for.
You know, like, I think, like, a pretty powerful moment early on, like, one of the first times that we see Alejandra, or actually the first time we meet her, she, like, her husband sort of just, like, thrusts himself upon her and has sex with her, like, without her consent. And then in the very next scene, she's in the shower and is pleasuring herself, and then she's interrupted by her kids kind of, like, knocking at the bathroom door. So you're right that it's, like, unexpected. All of that is within, like, the first maybe 5 minutes of the movie. But it's really sympathetic to her character. Like, we fully understand how unhappy and frustrated she is by just those two short scenes back to back.
Mm-hmm. Because she doesn't get pleasure from her husband. She has to do it herself until, of course, big old creature comes into her life. And the CGI in this monster, I think, is pretty good, actually. For a movie that's seemingly low budget, a lot of care went into the digital creation of this monster.
For the most part, we do see the monster, like, in bits and pieces or kind of in shadows. There is one shot where we do get a very, well, maybe two shots where we get a very, very good look at it. And in one of those shots, it's, like, the most sexual moment of the film, and it's pretty shocking. I think it works pretty well. And then at the end, it, like, we see its face kind of, like, fully head-on, like, almost a close-up of it. And I think that moment is a little bit disappointing. Like, there's been so much, like, mystery and lust and fear for this thing, and then we see it, and it's like, oh, is that all it is? But for the most part, I think it's really, really well done.
You say tentacled sex monster. For a whole year, man, I've just been picturing, like, an octopus-type thing. This is not an octopus-type thing. It's very smooth and sleek. Each of the tentacles, it doesn't have suckers like an octopus does, but each, you know, head of the appendage of the slithering tentacle, you know, it does look like a penis. It has, like, a little mouth opening, and the goal, I mean, the beast, the creature, it's probably sentient,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have, like, a face or any, like, defining characteristics in that way. But it knows to put its tentacles in just about every hole in a human body. Because what it does is perform the ultimate, you know, sexual pleasure. And like you said, there is one scene where we see that. It is very shocking. And you get to see, like, oh, I get it now. This is what's going on.
Right. Yeah, like, that, and that's one of the few moments in the movie where I'm like, oh, is this really necessary? But I think ultimately it kind of is, because, like, we need to really understand why the characters are so sexually obsessed with this thing. And I think that shot is like, oh, that's right. Nothing else on earth could, like, do what that creature is doing at that moment. So
exactly. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, like, the fact that it doesn't have a face, like, that kind of means that we can imbue whatever we want into that creature. So we, you know, like at first we think that it is like a creature of pleasure and that's what it's designed to do. But then towards the end of the movie, of course, it starts killing people and it starts behaving very violently. So then it kind of turns into like a metaphor for, you know, sexual violence and for like an addiction that we can't, the characters can't resist, even though, you know, it's dangerous for them to keep on giving into this thing. So I think like the facelessness is kind of, it just like adds to the metaphorical power of the thing, if that makes sense.
I mean, you see that in a lot of other monster movies too.
Yeah.
You know, keep the design sort of as general, as vague as possible. So we as the audience can put our own fears and anxieties onto the creature.
Yeah. Do you mind if I talk about just one more shot real quick? I know we've already talked about the cinematography quite a bit.
I think this movie's bread and butter is the cinematography.
Totally agree. I think like one of the most powerful shots to me is when Alejandra wakes up in the barn before she has the sexual encounter. And again, it's kind of like a medium static shot, like nothing crazy is going on with the camera. But the lighting is fantastic. There's just like this kind of like red light coming in through the slats in the barn. So there's like this eerie, like bright red backdrop as Alejandra is like looking off screen and like fear and desire and fascination. And certainly like the performance is a big reason why that moment is so effective as well. But it's just like a perfect shot. And I feel like if there is one image in the movie that like perfectly represents the combination of like, you know, kind of pulpy outlandish sci-fi and like gritty naturalism, it is that shot. I love it so much.
All right. Well, I'm ready to move on if you're ready to move
on. Let's do it. I mean, I like this movie a lot, so there's a lot in the good category for me. I think it's a really bizarre and original film. I think it's trying to tell a very human story through all these kind of monstrous, like sci-fi horror metaphors, which we've already talked about. And it's not uncommon in like the, you know, sci-fi or horror genres, but I think it's very well done here. The aesthetic is really great. The cinematography and music are like perfectly creepy. I think there's an admirable social commentary about prejudices in Mexican culture. Very strong performances. There's one other scene that I want to bring up real quick, which demonstrates those very strong performances. It's when Alejandra is watching a horror movie and her very young son is with her. He must be about 4 or 5 years old, I would guess. And the movie that they're watching is like a really gory zombie movie. And she's crying because of everything that's happening with Angel and her brother Fabian and all that. And her son kind of consoles her and says that it's just, you know, the movie they're watching on TV is just a horror movie and not to cry about it. It's, you know, it's a, like a moment of levity and tenderness, but also sadness, of course.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was really drawn by the performances, especially Angel. The character is dealing with so many complicated feelings like we just talked about. So, you know, that actor was really able to show off some really subtle dexterity in, you know, kind of what's going on in his mind there. I love the cosmic horror. We don't get a whole, it's not like heavy on the horror, but when we do get the space creature involved, you're like, what planet did this come from? Is there a whole race of these things? There's so much left unsaid and unknown about the monster and what its ultimate goal is in this world on Earth. What is it here for? Did it come here by accident? Is its goal to have sex with everybody on the Earth? I don't know. And I love all those question marks. I thought it was a really unique blend of genres, of sort of a melodrama with a space horror movie.
And it does like a surprisingly good job of balancing those elements, I think.
So it's like, it's tough because like there's nothing I didn't like about this movie. Like it is a really solid, tightly constructed film. The cinematography is gorgeous. You're not going to get this in a Godzilla movie. You know, it's just maybe not everyone's cup of tea, especially if you're talking about the, you know, the graphic depictions of sex and violence. You know, it can, I would imagine it might turn some sensitive viewers away. I would say I would challenge you to push through with those, maybe cover your eyes. You know, don't not watch the movie because of some full frontal nudity, but it is there. The kids were a little annoying sometimes, but
yeah,
but not enough to derail it for me.
I did like the moment early on when like one of her sons has like this hideous red rash all over his face. Like, I, for seemingly no reason, because that's gone in, like, the next moment that that kid appears on screen. It's like, yeah. For me, it was just like, wow, like, everything in this movie is unpleasant, at least for, like, the first 20 minutes, you know, including that kid's rash.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the movie, like, really starts with a lot of images that I think are designed to not only hook your attention, but destabilize you. You're just like, whoa, whoa. Sex, violence, whoa. And then it settles into like a nice pace until the end.
Right. And like you said before, like it really, you know, you start to realize that it's really trying to take a good long look at the characters. And that's really kind of like the main priority of the film, I think.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the bad stuff, you know, like there were a couple moments where I did ask myself, is this just empty shock value? Which before I watched it, I thought would be in the film a lot. Like I kind of just assumed that a movie with this plot would be, you know, sordid, like salacious, all that kind of stuff. There's not a lot of that in the movie. I think pretty much all of it is justified. There is a moment, it's like an extreme close-up of a woman's pair of panties getting like soaking wet. And like it does serve a point. Like the film is trying to convey how like, this is the Veronica character. She like cannot stop thinking about this sex creature and like feels drawn to it. So I understand like the logic for that shot, but like it does seem kind of gratuitous, or maybe it's just the shot itself that like is different in tone than the rest of the movie. I think like any scene pretty much in which we have like, you know, some kind of like shocking subject matter, whether it's sex or violence, there is a reason for it. So I don't think it's just empty shock value.
And if you are looking for empty shock value because you do know about this movie, you may be disappointed.
Yes. Yeah, I mean...
again, yeah, challenge your expectations, but it is what it is, and it stands solid on 2 feet.
Absolutely. The only other like mild critique that I would have is the ending, which is so abrupt that it almost seems like... I don't know. I love like open ambiguous endings, but sometimes it kind of seems like they just didn't know how to end the movie, so they just like cut it off all of a sudden. I think it works okay in this case, although I don't know. There's just like so much setup that like any kind of conclusion would be kind of unsatisfying, I think, in a way.
Yeah. Right. Like again, how does it end? Where, because like nobody's out to kill this monster. Any other kind of ending would disservice what we've been watching, which is an intimate film about a monster in a barn. It's not about the army trying to kill it or a mob with pitchforks trying to kill it. That story does not belong with The Untamed. So the ending is the ending it set out to create.
Yeah, totally. I think you just convinced me that my critique was not actually a critique at all, because it works perfectly for the movie. And you know, like the issues and the themes that the movie talks about are going to keep on happening. So of course there's not really going to be like a neat and tidy conclusion to all of it.
Well, I only came upon that because of what you were talking about. Oh, so
hey. Synchronicity. I love it.
The movie is not particularly campy. I will say the crater full of copulating animals, I think, was darkly humorous. Yeah. Right? Like, it's supposed to be absurd, a moment of what the hell are we looking at here? And then it zooms in, it focuses on pairs one at a time. So, like, you really get to see these Gila monsters doing it. And it's just like, that's how they do it? It's weird, but in a darkly humorous way, I feel like.
Yeah, I think you're right. I you know, also like the snakes in that scene. Like, I've never seen snakes have sex before. That was pretty awesome. Yeah, it is like it's darkly humorous, but also it's kind of scary. I wouldn't say it's sexy, but it is like, you know, it has sex in it. So it's just like a weird combination of different tones. And I will say that I've never really seen anything like that in a movie before, which is quite a compliment, I would say.
Yeah. I want to know how they filmed that scene.
Yeah. I don't know if it's CGI, but if it is, it's incredibly good CGI.
Yeah. I almost wonder if it's like footage, other footage of animals mating that they like composed, put together on the same, you know, in the same shot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah. Cause I don't know how else they could have done it. Yeah, like there was that moment, the image that I talked about before, like the most sort of sexual part of the film probably, where we see Alejandra like in the midst of like sexual ecstasy with this thing. And that's like, it's done really well, I think, because of like the character and like how much we've invested in Alejandra, and like we know where she's coming from and like what her, again, what her desires and fears are and all that. So I think it works pretty well in that moment. I think like outside of that kind of narrative subtext, it might be a little bit ridiculous, that image, but it works well in the context of the film.
Right. Like if we open the movie on that image, we're not buying this film as a serious story.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Escalante does so well. He only teases us in the beginning with a tentacle, and then he saves the money shot for the end when we've earned it, when we were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, no, it is kind of all leading up to that in a way. So I think that's probably why it works.
Yeah. All right. What do you say we wrap this bad boy up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Should I give our rundown of our usual ratings?
Please do.
All right. So at Camp Kaiju, we have our four ratings that we give to all the films that we discuss. Number one, it's a timeless classic and stands the test of time. And I will just add that this movie is only about 5 years old, but we're kind of predicting the future here if it will stand the test of time. Our second rating is there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and will stand the test of time. Number three, it may be historically significant or just fun, but it does not stand the test of time or will not. And our fourth rating, it is not worth revisiting and definitely will not stand the test of time. I'll just go ahead and give my rating. For me, I'm going to give this the second highest rating. There may be some moments that don't totally work. It's not the most like pleasant watch in the world, but it's such a complex, weird, effective movie, very well made, well acted. I just really admire this, especially given its kind of ridiculous concept.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I'm going to stay with you. I was hovering between the second highest and the second lowest, and it really just comes down to, like you said, it's not the most enjoyable watch in the popular sense. Like, what are we gonna watch tonight, honey? Let's put on The Untamed. Ooh, I love that movie. No, I mean, maybe. I'm not gonna say no, but I think where the movie's strength lies is its complexity in human characters, but also the atmospheric dread that it presents. I don't see a lot of movies like this. The closest I've seen is something like the recent Color Out of Space.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit more bombastic, you know, and spectacle heavy. Mm-hmm. But it had that same sense of eerie dread that is uncomfortable. It's one of The Untamed is one of the scariest movies I've seen in a long time because of what it suggests. And in that way, I think it does stand the test of time.
I'm so happy to hear that. I'm glad that you enjoyed it and that I didn't, bring a terrible movie to the podcast. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it's scary because of what it says about human nature. And like ultimately, you know, in a lot of horror movies that I love, that is kind of the scariest part of it. So. Yeah.
Well, everybody, thank you for watching The Untamed. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope we didn't scare you away from either this film or our show. So if you did like what you hear, please rate, review, and recommend it to a friend. If you have a buddy who thinks this would be a good fit for, word of mouth is always our best way of getting the word out. So you can visit us on Instagram at CampKaijuMovieReviews.com or Patreon for more monster movie content. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. And before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com, hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And as Camp Kaiju says, thanks again, friends. Until next time, stay campy.
¿Sabes el lugar exacto donde te atacó?
¿Te gusta el sexo?
A todos, ¿no?